Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Text number, and joe at rte.ie. John O'Connor. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Joe.
And John, I haven't spoken to any member of Sinead's family. This is the first time someone I've spoken to them. So I wrote to the family, but I just want to add on behalf of myself and indeed Liveline, our sincere condolences to yourself, your great, great, great man that is your father, John, who I know, Joseph Emer, and Owen, and Sinead's extended friends and family. But John, the first thing I want to tell you is you contacted us saying you were very unhappy. We'll go into it in a sec with the new waxwork that was unveiled yesterday in the National Waxwork. I can tell you, John, they have decided to...
Now it's been withdrawn.
Yeah. And thankfully. What was your upset about it?
Well, one, I just didn't think it looked like her at all, and I don't want to denigrate any artist, because Emer, my sister, is quite a well-known artist. Like normally, I would be a very private person, and I've avoided the whole limelight of Sinead all my life. Yeah. When I saw it online yesterday, I was shocked. I thought it looked something between a mannequin and something out of the Thunderbirds. And I thought Sinead would have been very fond of looking well, and she certainly did. And if it was supposed to be a representation of her in her early 20s when she did a Nothing Compares to You, it just looked nothing like her. I thought it was hideous. And I was wondering, was it just me? And then I went on to Facebook and saw lots and lots of comments about it. And I think if it was meant to be to honour her memory, I think it's inappropriate that they put something as hideous up in any sense of honour, because it certainly wasn't that. And two, if they were going to honour her, I think they should actually look at putting in a statue somewhere in Dublin. And that we have one for good old Phil Lynott and Luke Kelly and even the fictional Molly Malone. And I think Sinead would be deserving of that. But there's also enough visual stuff out there in terms of videos and photos that shows... what she did look like, and obviously something that would represent her.
And John, were you or any member of the family, as far as you know, were you aware that this was going to happen?
I can only speak for me. I wasn't aware that it was going to happen. I do know that Sinead's former husband, John Reynolds, who's a lovely man, was aware of it. And I only know that because I saw it online. I haven't actually been speaking to John for a while. But I suppose from my point of view, and again, the day that's in it, I fully appreciate that, the world lost a star and somebody with an incredible musical presence and all of that. I lost my sister. And to me, that's what's important. And as she's not here to defend herself or to speak for herself, I just took it upon myself to contact you about it,
And I'm very conscious that today is the anniversary. Have you, John, have you a view on this whole idea of waxworks?
The only waxwork place that I've ever been to is actually Madame Tussauds in London. And I was certainly very aware that over there, what they seem to do is very representative of the people that they model. And I'm not sure about the Dublin one. I haven't been to it. And in fairness to whoever did this, I haven't seen it. I've just seen photos. I haven't seen the photos. I'm not sure I want to see it.
Well, I see one number of people that contacted us described it that they went to the nearest department store and took a mannequin. Hugh Linehan... well-respected reviewer and journalist in the Irish Times, he said it was like a mannequin from an East German department store. And that in itself says a lot. Paddy
Dunn said to me last night that he'd seen better in Shaw's in the window.
In Shaw's. Shaw's almost nationwide, is it?
Indeed. And you were saying, Paddy, You were talking to Paddy, were
yeah,
you?
But he's going to come on now. Paddy Dunning. Paddy.
Oh, good.
Paddy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Paddy, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Very good.
Thank you, John. Thank you for taking the decision that you took. I'm just looking at some of the quotes here online.
Well, you know, Sinead was a friend of mine. You know, and when, just to tell you how this happened, and like sympathies with you and the family today. It's a, you know, serious day and her anniversary. And I remember hearing about her death last year. I was actually looking up at the Wall of Fame, which her picture is up there. I got a call to say that she had passed away. I was shocked, and I appreciate the day that. So, yeah, listen, tell you what happened. So, PJ, our fantastic sculptor, who has had a big, great career in sculpting, you know, delivered the figure in to the night before. We didn't get to actually see the figure. He wasn't feeling well this year. He's after retiring. Now, he has done fantastic works of Liam Neeson and, you know, Liam Cunningham. Liam Neeson was in Star Wars, Liam Cunningham and Game of Thrones. And, you know, we have to give him credit where credit's due. But when I had a look at the statue, I walked in to launch it there. And when I saw it, I too, you know, didn't get that feeling that I normally get from PJ's fantastic work. I know Sinead, she lived, you know, she came down to record with, I spent years, I've known her for 40 years. And I just went, my heart sunk a bit. There was a whole load of people in the room. We went ahead with the launch. And, you know, I didn't sleep last night. And this morning I called the team, I called PJ.
Paddy, you got incredible coverage. Every single newspaper this morning.
Yeah,
RT News, RT, I presume, Virgin and the other stations as well. You did extraordinary. The Wax Museum did extraordinarily well out of this.
Yeah,
Wax Museum is not a charity, Paddy, and I don't expect it to be a charity. But a family going into the Wax Museum today, if they thought that Sinead was still there, regardless of how it appears, a family going into the Wax Museum in Dublin today of two adults and two children will pay £60 to get in. This is...
Yeah, so for four people, we let the fifth one in free.
Yeah, but since 60...
I think the Wax Museum is great value, you know. You've got so many things, but
Paddy, let's be clear about this. Let's be clear about this. And you are a businessman, and you're a brilliant businessman, and entrepreneur in ideas. First of all, it is extraordinarily remiss of you to say you only saw the wax work of Sinead when you walked in.
Yeah,
what was a big rush?
Yeah, so PJ felt sick.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are you doing this to get publicity?
No, absolutely not. Like, you know, the Wax Museum runs itself without publicity. We have a launch and that's it. You know, do our advertising.
But I mean, as the overseer of the museum, and like you knew Sinead for 40 years, I knew Sinead for 54 years. And I'm just wondering, like, do you not actually get to see things before they're put on display?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. The process of normal process would be, you know, the team would be presented by the sculptor. The sculptor, we would analyse it and review it and approve it. But that did not happen this time.
Why?
And that's why. No,
why?
Like, I didn't sleep last night.
Paddy, why did it not happen this time? You've upset a lot of people, including members of Sinead's family, on this day. Now every day is important.
I appreciate that, and I deeply regret that. And I'm sending out my apologies. That's why I'm on this show. When you called me to say,
what's your proposal
to,
like, are you going to get another one done that is realistic, or what's the plan there?
Oh, absolutely. I want obviously the statues to, you know, be as close to the likeness and the resemblance of the character of the person, especially in this is my friend. So I had to take the decision to cancel the statue, and we'll go again, and we'll remodel, and we have to do better on this occasion. And we're all in agreement about that.
If you want people to be people who knew and loved Sinead to be involved with that, you could speak to anyone in our family, including myself.
Absolutely.
And we'd be more than happy to give you some steering. But I just thought, and particularly, I just thought it was really, really bad timing that the day before her anniversary to do that. There's a family, certainly. I can only speak for myself here. I'm upset enough, and you may not have slept last night, but I certainly didn't. That when I see what is an unfair and invalid representation of my sister, and as I said earlier, the world may have lost a star, and they did, but I lost my sister, and I accept that you lost a friend. So I'm trying to be fair about this, but it just should not have been put there, even without checking with somebody. Blowing to her, is this all right? But you knew it wasn't when you saw it.
I tried to ring. John Reynolds was on a plane, we did contact. But listen, I'm with you on this. Absolutely.
Sure. Okay.
I understand and apologise for any hurt that might have caused anybody. And that's why we have, made this decision. And we're all in agreement, and that's why I've come online.
Yeah, but Paddy, you still haven't answered the question. Why did you rush? Except you did rush without seeing the final product, which is whatever one thinks of waxworks, but is a pretty important honour for somebody. Why was it rushed for yesterday?
Well, it was to celebrate the anniversary, to recognise, a date in the year, for Sinead. She passed away on this day, and I think this day is an important day for, of course, it's an important day for the family, but it wasn't supposed to be, it was supposed to be a celebration. I was hoping that the statue was going to be delivered. As I said, we didn't have time to analyse it, review it like we usually do. And I'm sorry to say, mention PJ was not well, and there was a big mistake here. It did not go through the right process. And on that basis, I'm making the call to pull the statue. Apologise.
And is it gone? Is it gone as we speak?
Yes, I've just I've told them to take it down.
A number of people commented on its location.
So behind, we had it in. Say again.
Its location, Paddy, behind Star Wars or something.
So yeah, that was. So the photographers wanted a black background. We took it from where the rock stars are, and there was a lot of rock stars beside it. They wanted to get a photograph with it on its own. And then, 5-6 feet away from it was the Star Wars, set. Yeah. And so the camera guys took advantage of that.
You see, what about, as John suggested? And John, you mentioned earlier to us in your contact about the National Gallery. The National Gallery have been on to us to say they're putting up a photograph of Sinead taken by Hugh O'Connor. Hugh O'Connor, the actor, he's a fine photographer, and he took it when he was working with Sinead. Now we'll send it to you, apparently they have another photograph of Sinead, but it's not on display at the minute. But Paddy, John's point about the difference in a waxwork and a statue is that a waxwork is a commercial, totally legitimate enterprise. A statue would be somewhere you don't pay to see Philip Lynott or Lynott. You don't pay to see the wonderful piece on Luke Kelly down in Sheriff Street.
I'd pay sixty quid
in to see Sinead if she was there today.
I'd love to see a statue of Sinead in Dublin City for the general public. I'd actually support that.
I would love to know, how do we get that to happen? Does anybody know? I don't.
We start here. We start at camp.
Sure. Grant. Paddy, can I just say to you that, what you said, I totally accept, and I think it's quite reasonable. I'm sorry that you didn't get to see it, but I appreciate the fact that you've been very upfront and honest to say, look, it was overlooked because of whatever, and I get that. But I would say to you, if you want to contact any one of my family, Joe, I'm sure, will give you my number if needed, and I'd be happy to talk to you about it.
Okay, John, stay there, John, if you can, please. Michelle Hennessy, Joe at RT.ie. You come in support of John, Michelle.
I do, Joe. I saw it this morning. Sinead O'Connor was stunningly beautiful. She was the most beautiful woman. And when I saw the wax monument of her this morning, my heart sank. It was... No disrespect to the artist, it was vile. It was all in the eyes. It wasn't. Sinead O'Connor was absolutely exquisite. And that was an insult, what was unveiled yesterday. It was an insult. And I feel my heart breaks for the family. It really does. She was so beautiful, and it was awful. It was awful. It was disgusting.
I think in fairness, Paddy has accepted that. And I'm trying to be fair to both myself and PJ. If PJ wasn't well, Paddy didn't get the chance to see it. I get that.
But Michelle, obviously from what you're saying, you saw Sinead.
I would. I live in Braytown. I'm lucky enough to live near the seafront. Yeah. I never met her. But I would be walking along the seafront, and I'd see her sitting in her conservatory, and everybody would just leave her be. Joe, she was so beautiful, so beautiful. But you know, I do hear it's being removed. What John O'Connor has said has been taken on board. Sinead would be so proud of John O'Connor for coming on publicly and having to speak out on his sister's behalf. It's just a shame he's had to do it on the day that it is, on Sinead's first anniversary. It's so disappointing that John has had to come out and speak up for Sinead O'Connor. But I think forget any waxwork thing. I think a statue in honour of Sinead needs to be. I think it would be beautiful.
Well, apparently there is a I don't know if it's a written rule or an unwritten rule or whatever, that the person who is to be memorialised in public in Dublin should have passed at least 10 years previously.
It
is. And by the way, Sinead will not be forgotten in 10, 20 or 100 years.
Her
artistry and her
She was she was outstanding. Every evening, Joe, well, not every evening, but at least 3 times a week, I go down the seafront with my dog and walk the seafront. And every time I just look across at her beautiful house, you know, and think of her. No, she'll never be forgotten. She was iconic, absolutely iconic. Amazing. But I just would like to send all my sympathy to John and all her family today.
Thank you for that.
And I really would.
And I'd say to you, Michelle, I don't know whether you read the acknowledgement from the children of Sinead, as well as Sinead's extended family. It's a lovely piece thanking all those who attended the services and also all those who sympathised. But there's a special word at the end, and I'll read it out to you. It's from the family. We ask that our privacy continue to be respected. That finally, we wish to thank Sinead's fans and admirers for the wonderful funeral procession they gave her past her old home in Bray, and for the national and international outpouring of love and affection for Sinead from the time of her passing. The prayers and thanks of the extended O'Connor family are with you all. It's a very moving piece, obviously very poignant, and given the day that's in it and given the untimely passing of Sinead on this day last year. Thomas Cassie, Thomas, you're listening. Your point, please.
Is that chap that from the Wax Museum still there, Joe?
Paddy, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just asked Paddy, when he seen that, did he think that looked like anything that would resemble Sinead O'Connor? Because I can't believe he did. And if he did not, which I believe he didn't, why did he put that on show? It's an absolute disgrace.
So, yeah, I'm here. I mean, when we got, as I said earlier, you know, my heart sank. I know Sinead.
Well, why did you put it on then if your heart sank?
I've taken the decision to take the statue out. I have done that.
It should have never been put there. It should have never been put there. It's not fit enough to go in Dunstore's window. Fit to go in Dunstore's window to advertise a €2 dress, never mind put up as a tribute to Sinead O'Connor.
Okay. I want to, I just, because I know John, in fairness, is asking and about a statue, and Anne Rochford, yeah. Joe with RT Daddy.
There's a couple of things that again I just want to repeat,
yeah.
And I respect the fact that Paddy came on and said what he said and has withdrawn it. So I think that is for now the end of that. And moving towards the statue, I think that would be reasonable.
Okay. Well, Anne Rochford,
it's funny when people keep saying, you know, Sinead O'Connor, because to me that was, you know, there's, I suppose, a number of different parts to it. The Sinead O'Connor, the very public part, but I'm talking about Sinead, my sister.
Yeah.
And it's just quite different in an emotional way, if that makes any sense to you.
Okay. Of course it does, of course it does. Anne Rochford, Anne, you have another idea for Sinead and how to memorialise her.
Hi, Joe. I think that statue was absolutely grotesque. She's the most beautiful woman ever, and I think a place in Bray, on the seafront in Bray, would be a fitting tribute to her. Bray is an up-and-coming tourist area in Dublin now, and I think the people of Bray would appreciate it, and all their visitors too.
John, you've more to be doing.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
And one, yeah, because she lived in Bray for so long, that might be nice. I did hear that people in Bray, I think in the Bray Men's Shed, are doing some little thing for, I think that they've made a bench or something, which is going up today, but I can't confirm that. I think, you know, whether it was in Bray or the city centre, I think some sort of monument would be appropriate.
I would have thought the city centre, and with respect, because...
Or maybe both.
Yeah, exactly, or because of her national and international standing and reputation. But anyway, apparently, John, we'll find out more. Apparently, a number of years have to pass, and I suppose that's for various different reasons. But you'd like to see a statue.
I think it would be appropriate.
Okay.
Joe, can I share a memory just with that I have just come to mind? When I was 18 years old, we set up rehearsal studios I was in a band, and we set up rehearsal studios because there was nowhere for the bands to rehearse, and that was Temple Lane Studios, became Temple Lane Studios. And, you know, we opened the doors in 1984, and in comes this 17-year-old girl, Sinead, wanting to book a room. And I can see her right now with her guitar strapped to her back. She'd come around from working, I think, in the Badass Cafe, and she wanted to book a rehearsal room. Tom McCooth, I think, was the name of the band she booked in under. I think she, you know, so it's, I can see her there. She went, I told the roommate it was available, and it was like £10 for the rehearsal room for a PA system. Yeah. She went upstairs and she stayed there for months and months rehearsing, writing, recording. I've known her for 40 years since I did her last recording. I've spent lots of time with her, and, you know, I've gone through, you know, very, very sad times with her. You know, I really do want the family to know that, you know, this... this statue that was launched in the Wax Museum has been taken down. Apologies from the team.
No, I appreciate that, Matty.
Yeah,
we love as well. In terms of Sinead and going through hard times, lots of people did go through hard times with her, and certainly she had those. And as her brother, I appreciate other people who were in her life as well. And I know that that wasn't always easy.
Okay. Yeah, listen, she was fantastic and beautiful, and you know, I have very fond memories. She had fantastic, beautiful voice, lyrics, etc. You know, so we all. That's the Sinead we all want to remember,
and
I would love to support any public statue, and I'd love to be in contact with you. Maybe next week I can call you.
Yeah, okay. Grant. Yeah, well, as I say, Joe and his team can give you my number. I'm totally happy about that.
And
Thank you very much.
I'm very conscious as well on the day that's in it. I know for a close family of anyone bereaved, every day, every hour is it brings up a memory. But on this, the first anniversary, I'm also conscious as well, John, of your nephew, Shane, Sinead's son. May he rest in peace. He was just 17. Yeah. And he died, I think, about 18 months before his mum.
He did. Yeah.
And Donald as well.
Shane was a great kid, actually.
Yeah.
He was one of those kids that even when he was a tot, if you went to give out to him for something, he'd make you laugh to distract you. He's a great sense of humour.
Yeah. And that photograph of Sinead and Shane.
Yeah, the image of each other, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
So we made the two of them rest in peace. John, and I know a year has passed, but again, to your family, condolences, and as I say, to that beautiful acknowledgement in the Irish Times, the children, to Sinead's children, to her extended family, and to all our many, many friends. And as you gather, John, I presume you gathered, I don't know, but I presume you gathered how close people who never met Sinead felt towards her. That connection was...
Unfortunately, Sinead, in her latter years, didn't realise just how loved and important she was to people. That she had, in my view, as a therapist, been misdiagnosed and didn't ever get the proper treatment that she should have had. And I mean, at one point, she thought she would never make it back. And I remember sitting on her doorstep in Bray, going, Sinead, if you stood in front of a microphone, lots of people, and she was, no, I've ruined my career. And if she was still alive now, I deeply regret that she can't see the amount of love that was there and is still there for her.
Yeah. And that,
you know, and even going down to her grave, that there's people with, you know, flowers literally every day of the week going down. And lots of tributes up on Facebook and whatever, and I think she will never be forgotten.
The person I rely on in terms of music reviews is Dave Fanning, and he said Sinead's final album was astonishing in terms of its quality and its music. Astonishing.
Yeah, Dave is somebody I have tremendous respect for.
Okay.
And he's sitting. I don't know him a long time.
Of course. He's great. John, are you still a practicing therapist? I presume you are.
I unfortunately, I developed MS a few years ago, I just didn't have the energy to continue. So I had to retire from therapy work, unfortunately.
Okay. And I won't intrude any further, but I always meet your dad on Christmas Eve in Grafton Street.
Yeah.
He's a beautiful man, and he's written a book, and he was a great campaigner when I was a student, and your father was leading the campaign on progressive social issues when it was neither popular nor I hope your namesake, I hope your dear dad as well.
My dad is 86 years young at the moment, and fit as a fiddle. He's fitter than I am, and reminds me all the time.
Okay.
But any time I go out with him, I go, we're both called John, but he's the younger looking one.
Okay. Well, John O'Connor, thank you so much.
Not a problem at all.
Okay, thank you.
And again, thanks to Patty for coming on.
Well said.
That took bravery and effort, and I respect that totally.
Okay, John O'Connor, okay. Brother of Sinead, who died on this day last year, and she was 56. May she rest in peace, and also thinking of her son, Shane.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Talking to Des Cahill and Jackie Hurley a few minutes ago. They're in conclave in their office here in Stage 7 in RTE. Well, their office is basically a little couch in the corner that they're squeezed onto, and we go over every now and then and we can bring them a sandwich or a cup of iced water, or indeed Des loves lemon water, lemon in boiling water. That's his regime at the minute. Wishing them well for tomorrow night. And Anne has contacted us. And it's not about this coming Sunday, it's about this past Sunday. What's the issue, Anne?
Hello, Joe. My grievance is that they bring on the Arcane Boys band to play every time there's a big match on,
yeah.
Which I absolutely love. They give them about 2 minutes. 2 minutes we see them for, or we see that we hear them playing.
Mm-hmm.
These boys have been out practicing, preparing. They're out in all kinds of weather, and they're up there, and they just get about 5 minutes time on that. And I just think they should leave them play their little thing, do the parade with the players, and let us see them. I enjoy them, and I'm sure many other people do too.
Oh, you want? I thought they were on television. No, I didn't see the pre. On Sunday.
Very little. Yeah, very little, Joe. Very little. Just a glimpse, really,
I think. I thought they did the full march around the...
They do, yeah, but we don't hear them because they keep talking over them.
And who's... Hang on, who's talking over them?
Well, whoever the commentators are.
Marty Morris?
Oh, no, not Marty. No, not Marty. The, not Marty wouldn't do that. No, Marty wouldn't do that.
So basically, what you're saying is that when the Artane Boys band march around behind the, in front of the two teams, they march behind the band.
Yeah.
You want to hear the band.
I do.
Okay.
And another little thing while I'm on, Joe.
Okay.
If the players could stand straight at the anthem, I know they're buzzing and they're waiting to go. But if they could just stand still, hold their shoulders up and sing the national anthem, I think it'd be lovely.
Okay. Well, now,
Joe, I'm not asking for much.
Okay, where's Mildred? Are you there, Mildred?
I am, Joe. Surely to God, I am.
Oh, good.
Your Honour,
what's up? What's your little upset, Mildred, so to speak?
Well, I wouldn't have no fuss of upset. I'm glad to be there and love to be there to play for the teams around the place, but certainly we're second best, as we should be on a day like that. I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful for us to be playing in Croke Park next Sunday? You'd give your eye tooth for that. You know, it's a day that they bring in the band to march the two teams around, and that's our job to do that, and we love to do it. But we get the opportunity because maybe we're playing in smaller venues than Croke Park.
Because
we get the opportunity.
Okay, you're involved. You're involved with a band, and you're saying your band is not the Artane. Band.
No,
it's the Castlereagh Brass
the
and Reed Band.
Castlereagh Brass and Reed Band.
And
yes,
what instrument do you play, Mildred?
Well, when I started playing with the band first, I played the saxophone, but I play the drums now.
Okay. And is that
so
the big,
I'm the drummer, so...
Is that the big bass drum, or the...
No, the side drummer.
Okay.
We have two side drummers and a bass drummer. So we'd have good fun with the lads on the teams, because the lads are right next to the drummers, and we just say, well, you know, whoever marches behind me on my side always wins. And the other fellas say, we're lucky that we're playing in smaller venues, and we go on maybe a half an hour before the team comes out, and we get the opportunity to play to the crowd. So we entertain the crowd. We're lucky in that sense.
Okay. Which I think is part of what Anne is saying, but the minute the teams come on, be it in the Connacht.
We're second best.
Okay.
Second best, Joe, but it's good to be there. Second best or no second
well,
best?
Well,
it's great to be there.
Well, then given Anne's the sting of Anne's point about that we can't see enough of them and hear enough of them on television, when the Connacht finals, which they often are being televised, does the Castlereagh Brass and Reed get a look in?
Oh God, we do. Oh God, we do. Yeah, because we march the teams around, and we'll always play.
No, but I mean, are you on telly? Do you be on telly?
Oh God, we do, we do, we do. Yeah, my gorgeous face is on telly. Yeah. Yes, and they give us absolutely great coverage, and of course, I'm very well known for walking around the field in high heel shoes, so I get an extra mention.
Oh, very good, and. Okay.
Yeah, we're blessed to be on the field playing.
Are you the only pair of high heels walking around?
The only only high heels on the field.
So far. Now, by the way, what is the? I was trying to find it because I saw Anna contact us during the week, and I tried to find an album on Spotify by the Artane Boys band. And I couldn't. And the only thing I did find was the wonderful album by Danny Ellis, 900 Voices, which is about his time in our stunning.
Wasn't his story lovely, Joe?
But Mildred, what do you play? What does the Castlereagh Brass and Reed play at the games?
Well, you mean what tunes do we play?
Yes.
Well, when we're marching the teams round, we'll play maybe Fields of Athenry or the Saints go marching in or something like that. So we'll always get something nice and easy because we have to do a long walk round that field to get the teams all the way around. Suppose when we're playing tomorrow, the match would start, we'd play Galway Bay or we'd play something from the Armagh. We'd always play something belonging to the teams, do you know?
Yeah. And how often do you practice?
Every Monday night.
Okay.
Every single Monday night. Now, we've taken the month of August off. We take the month of August off every year.
Yeah.
But apart from that, we go to London for St. Patrick's Day and we go to New York every 3 years. So we walk down Fifth Avenue every St. Patrick's Day.
In your high heels?
Yes.
Well, that's the only way. That is the only way you're allowed to walk down Fifth Avenue in high. And Mildred, how is the band funded? How do you buy the instruments? Where does your money come from?
Well, we fundraise. We fundraise all year long. And if we were playing, say, for a football match in Roscommon, we get paid for that.
Okay.
And that goes into the kitty.
Yeah, okay.
And then at Christmas, we do Christmas carols and we do a lot of fundraising in different places. So all that, and we have, the council gives us a little bit, not a whole lot, it all adds up.
I get the message, yeah?
When we get to go to London, we get sponsorship over there as well. And the Americans are very good to us as well. So, it's well worth it to have that big, lovely parade in London or in New York. And then you have to come down to Earth and play for the Connacht final. But it's our local and we all know each other and everybody knows us. You'll hear somebody walking around the field and say, we have a guy on the bass drum, Danny Burke, and you'll hear them shouting, how are you, Danny? So you see, it's local and we love it. And I know I love it anyway. And now to get young people in sometimes mightn't be easy.
Yeah, of course.
College and all that sort of thing. But Joe, it's, whether we get a spot on television or not, so what? To be there is great and support the teams.
Okay. Andy, do you know if the Artane Boys band have complained?
Oh, no, I don't know. No, it's just myself.
Your observation, yes. So basically what you're saying is, apparently the procedure is the players shake hands with Uachtaráin na hÉireann, they then line up behind the Artane Boys band and parade around the pitch. And at this point, on the running order, apparently RTÉ go to the commentary and then it's out on Naveen, our national anthem. So you want the commentators to take a breath And
Can I come in with a little thing? Like, we are 30 people on the field, brass and reeds, saxophones, trumpets, trombones. The only gripe I would have is they would, with that lovely band on the field, they'll come along and they'll have a singer singing the national anthem. And I think maybe if they put the two of them together and let them join forces, it would be nicer rather than us standing there like nothing on earth. And this person singing, like, join in the two of us. We're lucky enough that the people sing along with the national anthem.
Okay.
But I would really,
Mildred, have you ever played for dignitaries?
Oh God, we have. We've played for very big dignitaries in New York, and all the mayor of London, and we have played for dignitaries, yes. I thought you were going to ask me that question, I'd have gone to my little boutique and put my people down.
Okay.
We did. I mean, you dignitaries.
Well, I'm thinking last year when Joe Biden came to the West.
Oh well, now we'd have given. I met Joe Biden, so that was good for me. The security would be way too much for us. We is 30 of us. That would be way too much in a small place like Innock. It would be way too much. It would be dangerous and all
especially,
that.
Especially if you're wearing a pair of high heels, they could be lethal. Mildred,
wouldn't mind.
I know, but Mildred, when you're marching around, you say you march around in high heels.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
But do they not suffer on the soft ground?
No, the pitch is very good. Not at all. Pitch is very, all the pitches are good.
Because high heels, as you know, do not come cheap. Like the last pair I bought was the women's Christian Louboutin, the Jelly Strass 80 pumps. I don't know whether you know them. They're in brown. I think with Brown Thomas, I paid €1,495 for them. And I wouldn't mind, Mildred. They wouldn't fit me. And I've been crippled ever since wearing them. And they won't give me my money back.
Well, Joe, you can just send them down to me, Joe.
Okay.
Well, I'm a size 4.
A size 4, okay. Okay, well, I'm crippled wearing them. Okay, and thanks indeed. We'll pass on the message to, I think Marty, every time I meet Marty, I met him yesterday, he's on the road, he's gone, he was heading up to Armagh, I presume he's heading back. He's going to be on with Desi and Jackie tomorrow night. I presume he'll be somewhere in Armagh, somewhere in Galway, where it promises to be another great day. Okay, how is the drum heavy, Mildred, people want to know?
No, we have a brace on our body that's over our shoulders, and no, it's not heavy. No, not at all.
You have a brace on your body, Mildred. Too much information, darling.
So
I just had image now in my head, Mildred, of you walking around in just a pair of Louis Vuitton, a high heels, and a brace and a drum.
Joe,
I pay in to see that alone.
I'll send you a WhatsApp, don't you worry, and you'll be grand.
Okay. Well, here we play something for you, Mildred. This is when the Saints go marching in, and we can hear the drums. Mind yourself, up Galway, up Armagh.
We'll see you in Carlow.
Oh, you're coming, great.
Yes,
next Friday.
Yes.
Okay, I'll wear me Louis Vuittons.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, Denise, Artain Boys Band.
Joe, I'm very surprised at you.
Why?
It's not called the Artain Boys Band anymore. It hasn't been for some time.
What's it called?
It's the Artain Band.
Oh, the Artain, yeah, okay.
What about the poor girls that are in it?
Sorry, okay. And do we see enough of them?
Well, I'd be biased now because my son is in it, so I'd always say
brilliant.
No, we don't see
brilliant.
Enough of them.
And how often do they practice? Because it is...
During the summer now, they're in three mornings a week, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday from 10:30 to 12:30.
In school? And,
during the summer, music during the summer.
Wow.
And it's kind of three or four nights a week, including theory then every other time of the year, you know.
Oh, that is serious musicianship, isn't it?
Well, they are serious musicians.
Yeah, I know, And, like on Sunday, this coming Sunday, Denise, what is the routine?
So like, they'll meet at the School of Music. They'll go in and get uniformed up. Then they'll pop their instruments onto the coach, get the coach down to Crow Park, and they'll be ready and waiting. So I'm not sure if they're doing something for the match on before the final this Sunday. But normally there would be a match on before, so they might do something at that. And then they'll go on and do their couple of songs, and then they'll play the national anthem. And I think they might be on at half-time then for the football final. They wouldn't normally be, but they may be on Sunday. I'm not too sure. But they'll be home about 5:00.
OK, and can they watch the match?
No, they can't. No, they can't. They don't even have anywhere to store their cases for their instruments.
No.
They literally stand in the tunnel.
And did they get a bar of chocolate or a bottle of Club Orange?
Yeah.
Packet of Tato.
If they're there for a few hours, I think they get a roll or something for their lunch.
Okay. And has your son, Mildred was saying she's travelled now to the States with the Castlereagh Brass and Reed. Has your son travelled with the Artane band?
Well, no, this is his first year actually performing in Crow Park with them. So they did go to the UK last year and that was real successful. So they're going up to Belfast now in October for 3 nights.
Right.
And they're... combining with another band up there and doing some concerts, so he'll be going to that now in October. So that'll be his first trip.
Okay. And you, I presume you're aware that it's Mannix, Councillor Mannix Finn, who brings it up every now and again. He'd like the word Artane because of its association with the industrial school, which is where the band began long time ago. He asked for the name to be changed. Is there any currency for that?
Not that I'm aware of. I think he needs to leave the past in the past.
And the name is so identifiable as well.
Yeah.
Okay, well, wish your son well. It's a great, what a magnificent skill to have, that musicianship.
Oh, they're fantastic. They're fantastic.
And well done, as you say, all the boys and girls. What, 3 mornings a week up to 4 nights? Wow. That is some dedication.
Yeah, commitment.
Okay. Best of luck on Sunday. Thanks for making the call, Denise. By the way, I should give you a bit of information about the Galway Cathedral. I actually hope to visit it tomorrow. Galway Cathedral and the fundraising, who paid for it? I came across a fantastic document sent to me by a friend of mine, Derek Cunningham, and it's the Galway Cathedral, and it is a small book written by the Most Reverend Michael Brown. It was the bishop who was there when it was built and consecrated, and he explains where the money came from. The Galway Cathedral cost, the estimate for the building of it came to £700,000 in the day, back in the late 1950s. That was from Sisk, where they won the tender. The fundraising had been going on for over 100 years. In 1876, a fund for building a cathedral in Galway was inaugurated with a bequest of £500 from a parishioner who resided in Kinvara. In 1909, they bought the site, which was an old military barracks. Then that wasn't appropriate, so then they had to buy another site, where it now resides, and that is on the site of the former jail in Galway. The fund in 1923, now remember, this is after the turmoil and the poverty, the fund was now up to £41,000. By 1936, it had gone up to £108,000. There was then a fundraising committee appointed. I think it was about 30 people on the fundraising committee. Every last one of them was a man. Not a single woman on the fundraising committee. And then, it was mentioned yesterday, this was the amount that the locals gave. Cardinal Cushing of Boston, who was there, was the papal legate, as was mentioned yesterday, at the opening of the cathedral 59 years ago next week. Cardinal Cushing, by the way, the Pope Paul VI and Pope Pius before him, Pope Pius gave €2,000 for the cathedral when the bishop went over to show him the plans. And then he appointed a pontifical legate, and that was Cardinal Cushing from Boston. And this little remarkable aside, Bishop Brown says when he went to see His Holiness Pope Paul VI, who had succeeded the greatly loved Pope John the 23rd, as you know, in 63, he asked for Cardinal Cushing to be sent as the pontifical legate to dedicate the cathedral. And that was granted. And upon the granting of this, Cardinal Cushing proceeded there and then to write a check, this 1965, to write a check for $100,000 for the cathedral. I don't know where he got the money from, but he wrote a check, as you do, there and then for $100,000. Now, proving that the and also various bishops sent various priests around the world to raise money for the cathedral, However, there still remained a large balance to be found, very large for a diocese, Archbishop Brown writes, of 58,000 souls. The people responded with great enthusiasm. A weekly collection of 2 shillings and 6 pence per house was adopted in every parish, except 3 which had the building or renovation of their own, didn't have their own churches on hand. And that went on every Sunday, as well as the normal church collection. In the Ireland of the late 50s and early 60s, when money was hard to come by and 0.5 crown was a lot of money to give it every week, for 6 years, the people, the parishioners of every household in Galway, every Sunday, in a planned giving operation, gave 2 and 6 pence, 0.5 crown per house for the building of the cathedral. So I think you can truly say it was paid for primarily, well, Cardinal Cushing is $100,000, and it was paid, where did he get $100,000? And then the people of Galway, now I don't know whether they had much choice in this 2 and 6 every Sunday, but they did give it, which is a remarkable achievement in the times that we're in it. Okay, Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we spoke yesterday about the sentencing, 30 years for Raymond Shorten, the taxi driver, raped 2 passengers in his taxi on 2 different occasions, and also had been separately charged and convicted last Monday for the rape of a 7-year-old girl over a decade ago on the day of her mother's funeral. So a full sentence of 30 years. Now there's the follow-up is starting. A number of people are now suggesting puts closed circuit television in every taxi. And Lar Kelly has contacted us. Lar, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
Good. Well, what do you think of this idea?
Well, someone thinks it's a really good idea to put CCT in taxis all over the country in terms of public safety. But the funny thing about this is, and it's beggars belief that the NTA have a driver check app. So the driver check app, if yourself is standing on the side of the road, Joe, you put out your hand, you put in your license number off the roof sign, it then gives you the license badge number, the license of the driver, it gives you the registration, it gives you the vehicle identity, gives you even the colour. And they never advertise this.
That's true. I was totally unaware of it.
Yeah, but they'll advertise on the bus that they're looking for drivers for £800 a week, or they're looking for mechanics. If we're talking about public safety, let's be safe about it. It shouldn't cost them that much to make that a campaign on all multi social media platforms.
You're saying there is an app on the, do you know exactly what it's called in the App Store?
It's in the App Store. It's on Google Play as well. It's just called the Driver Check.
Okay.
Simple. It's a free download for everybody.
Right.
Like, I was talking to one of your researchers yesterday, and she downloaded it, and I said to her, tell you what, here's my license number.
Okay, good idea,
and
yeah.
The minute I put it in, bingo, she got me straight away. She has my photograph, the ID of my car, my license inside, my roof sign license, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll even tell you, Joe, if you put in any one of those license numbers, it'll tell you that the vehicle's not licensed or the driver's not licensed. Okay. It'll automatically come up.
Now, the problem is if you're standing at the side of a road and there's a queue for taxis and it's a Saturday night or whatever, you mightn't have time or the energy or the concentration.
Yeah, but like the concentration, like at night time, that roof sign on the roof is actually lit up.
Hmm.
So it should be quite easy just to stand there and put in a 5-digit number and press check.
Yeah.
So before you even get into the car, you know who it is, whether it's Larry or it's Joe or it's Billy or
incredible,
Tom.
Yeah. Okay. Please enter one of the following and tap, sir. I did not. It's called Driver Check, Transport for Ireland. You're right. Why don't they advertise this? But there's photographs every second day of another new electric bus or something. But anyway,
advertise this.
TFI driver check. Please enter one of the following and tap search to find out if the operator is licensed and registered with the NTA. The roof sign number, one of the following. Either the roof sign number, either the car reg or the license, the driver's license number. And you put in a number and you get the details.
You get the full details of who's driving the car. The photograph of the driver, whether it's licensed, it gives you the registration, gives you the model of the car and even the colour.
Okay.
Simple.
And you just, yeah, okay, and you can screen grab that so you know who your driver was and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about the idea, how would a CCTV operate in a inside a taxi? Like, say some people say, no, I don't want to be on CCTV.
Well, like, you're going into GDPR there. Yeah. You know, you're getting into people's privacy. Like, that could be running and you could have Joe and his wife in the back of the car after having a night out and they're having a bit of a kiss and a cuddle. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't need to be filming that.
Exactly,
do you know,
yeah.
like, really and truly, if the NTA went out and done a complete advertisement programme right across the country, whether they take it up on social media, in the newspapers, on the buses, on the trains, and tell people this is about public safety, this is about your safety, download it.
And it would also, it's also telling the taxi drivers that people are being vigilant and they know who's driving the car when they get into it. It's a double-sided benefit. Yeah, exactly.
So everybody knows who, and then, you know, when you get into the car, oh, right, hang on, that number that's on the dashboard doesn't match the number that's on this.
Okay.
That's not the right driver. Sorry, can you pull over? I just want to get out.
And do you think there's too many complications with CCTV?
I think it is, yeah. And I think you're going into people's privacy and all of that. And you don't need to be really doing that. When there's an app that's free to download on both the Apple Store and Play Store, Google Play Store, and all it is a simple advertising campaign in terms of public safety. And we all know then. Like, my two daughters have it downloaded.
Very good. Okay. It's called Driver Check. It's very easy to get on the App Store, TFI, Transport for Ireland. And it's well worth. But I think you're right. I think there would be an awful lot of complications if there was CCTV.
I think so, demanded
in every taxi. Okay, safe travelling, Lara, above all else, to you and your passion. Okay, Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, more scams for people on holidays to be aware of. Kevin, explain.
How you doing, Joe?
Explain and prevent. Go ahead, please.
How you doing, Joe? My family and I, we just went over to Paris there, and it was December 21, you know.
Okay.
So we decided to go over for a long weekend, 4 days, you know. So we flew with Ryanair into Beauvais, and if anyone knows that, you have to get a bus from Beauvais down to the west of Paris. So we arrived down to Beauvais, or down to Port Malo, and I remember the day well. It was pouring with rain, absolutely pouring with rain, and there was roadworks up Port Malo, so we had to kind of go up and across the roadworks in the pouring rain and down into the metro. So we went down into the metro anyway, and we were planning on buying 5 tickets, Paris visit tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd done a bit of research beforehand, and it was going to cost us €190.
Okay.
But we were grand with that, you know, it was fine and everything. And then we put our all our details into the ticket machine. There's a tickets machine there, you know, all that.
Yeah.
And we put it in English, 2 adults and 3 children, and that was all grand. €190, please, it asked for.
Wow.
So we put our cards in, the whole lot, and it didn't work.
Okay.
It didn't take our money, you know, it didn't take our money. So we tried it 2 or 3 times with different cards, and still no luck.
Okay.
So then all of a sudden, this lady arrives out behind my shoulder, and she says, "Are you having problems there, sir?" You know, she had great mm-hmm. English. And she says, "Are you having problems there?" I says, "Yeah, yeah." I says, "The machine won't take our money, you know." And,
okay.
"Oh, I look after that," she says, you know. So she has this kind of a credit card on a lanyard, you know, one of them retractable lanyards, you know.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And she swipes on the machine. She puts it all in there, all her details, 2 out of 3 kids. And 5 tickets pop out of the machine. She goes, "There you go, sir." And I says, "Oh, thanks very much. You're great, you know."
Mm-hmm.
And she says, "That'll be €190. And I says, "Great, great, yeah." And I says, "I don't have any cash on me. It's all cards, you know." And she says, "Oh, no problem. There's an ATM just at street level, and I'll bring you up there, and I'll show you where the ATM is." So she showed us the ATM, went up. Now, she stood 10, 15 yards away. So, you know, she wasn't looking over my shoulder for the pin or anything.
Okay, so you weren't suspicious, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, I wasn't suspicious. So I extracted €200 from the machine and went down with her back down to the metro to meet my family. I gave her the €200. She gave me back the 5 tickets, and she got one of her associates to give me €10 in change. So we went on the metro, happy days, you know, and we arrived at the hotel. Now, we're all dog tired at this stage, you know, and my wife and kids were tired. So what I said to my little girl, she was 16 at the time, I said, "Listen, let's go down to the catacombs for a look, you know." You know, so me and her decided to go down there and have a look. So we went down to our local metro station, and I got them 5 tickets out anyway. I went into the machine, come out the other end, but the barriers didn't open.
Ah.
And I said, "Oh, what's going on here?" You know, and,
which are a 3-day pass.
Yeah, yeah, 3-day pass. You
2
know?
Adults, and 3 children, 200
yeah, yeah,
quid.
Yeah, and I tried all 5 tickets, and none of them would work. Now the guy in behind the Perspex screen, right near the barriers, mm-hmm. he came out and he looked at the tickets. He says, "There are 5 instant tickets for a 1-way trip."
Jeez.
And I said, "Oh, no,
sorry.
No, no." Yeah. And I says, "You know." I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "How much did you give this woman?" €190. Well, she spent €4.25 for them tickets.
Wow.
So she made €185.
And the lanyard was her card for buying tickets, and she bought
it. Exactly, yeah. It was her debit card or credit card or whatever, like, you know. But she looked, it was a slick. She looked the part and everything. She had a little Metro Velcro badge on her left lapel, and it had a baseball cap. And I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah." I wasn't aware. And your man, when I went to the other station, he says, "Was she wearing one of these tops?" And he was wearing, like, a green plastic top with Metro. And I said, no, she wasn't wearing that. She was like, but she did look the part. She didn't look like she was dragged from the streets or anything, you know. So the moral of the story is just to be aware of everything going over there.
It's a good scam. It's a good, well, they all are. It's a good scam.
And I only realised about 2 hours.
She said, she came over, official looking, saw you were in difficulties, which people often are at those machines.
Yeah, yeah.
And she said, "What do you want? I'll buy them. I'll get them for you." They pop and said, "You can pay me." That was my, well, the whole impression is that was my employer. That was my employee way of. And how much did you give her?
Oh, €190. But she I only had 200. I had 450s on me from the ATM. And she flagged down one of her associates, and he came over with €10, gave her €10, and she gave it to me, and I gave her the 200. So, but I wouldn't mind, but these ticket machines were right beside the official Metro tellers.
Yeah,
and there was a lot of people there, and a lot of tourists. You know, it's Port Malo is a big tourist. It's like Bazaar, And a lot of tourists hanging around there. And well, I couldn't believe that they were letting these people on Metro property. You know, and obviously they're there most of the days, I'd say, in various. I'd say they were hopping from station to station or whatever. But my own suspicions were that the reason why it wouldn't take the money is because there was some kind of a blocking mechanism on the ticket machine. It wouldn't take my money for some reason. I don't know. I'm not too sure of that. But, you know, it's just something to be aware of, that when you're going over there,
there's lots of scams.
The official people.
The three-card tricks or the ball under the cup, everything, then they all are scams. You will not win at any of them. They are a scam. They are a scam.
But just
be careful. It's a lot of money to lose on your opening day.
It put a damper on the weekend, you know. We were there, but like my wife was there. She said, don't worry about it. She said, it's only money. One of us could have been hurt, you know.
Well, you see, what I'm hoping now, Kevin, is somebody will be approached with that scam. I'm not hoping, but hoping that if someone is approached with that scam, could happen anywhere, that they will have heard you and will save themselves 200 quid. But anyway, that's the only consolation.
Tourist families there at the time, we weren't the only victims that day.
Kevin, go to Mila Mahogood. Thank you indeed. Jerry Kenny, were you in the Artane Boys band? What band were you in? The Artane Band?
I wasn't in the Artane Boys band, no, Joe.
Which one were you?
I'm in a band close to your heart, the Ballyfermot Boys accordion band.
Oh, I know, well, yeah.
Brother Victor was the leader.
And who was the teacher, wasn't it?
Brother Victor.
Brother Victor, okay. What did you do? I never had the dexterity. I couldn't afford it.
Well, I was an accordion band, but we had clarinets and trumpets in it as well. And I played a clarinet.
And did you ever play in Croke Park in the band?
We did, that's what I was saying. It was either 1956 or 1957. We played the two semi-final football All-Irelands.
And where was the Artane band?
The Artane Boys band weren't there. It was a trick where I could have won money on this many times. There was a flu epidemic in Artane, and they couldn't play.
Yeah,
and we substituted for them.
And did you get much notice of your big day?
Oh, we only got about 2 weeks' notice.
Okay.
Because I know the schoolyard in Ballyfermot, we walked up and walked down and walked up and turned. We did a lot of training for it.
And what do you think of...
The music was every day for 5 days.
Incredible. And what do you think of Anne's point earlier on that she felt that the Artane band don't get enough television time, either last Sunday or maybe this Sunday?
For the effort that they put in, I agree with her.
Yeah.
But nowadays, they're slightly different. Like at that stage, in those years, the forwards and the midfield lined up in the middle of the field.
Okay.
So you had six forwards and two midfield players on each team. So there were 16 players. And then when the referee threw the ball in, they all scarpered into their positions. But on the second game, we were standing ready to play the national anthem. And the Bishop of Cashel always threw the ball in. And before we started, he threw the ball in and that match started. And we had the scarper off the pitch.
Okay.
And then at half-time, the half-time came, we marched back onto the pitch and played the national anthem. I reckon it's the only time that the Irish National Anthem was played at half-time in Croke Park.
At half-time?
At half-time, yeah.
Okay, and did you ever play in front of any other dignitaries apart from Canon Troy?
No. We used to do a lot of charity work, going to different places doing charity work. And once a year we went to Belfast. We played in Belfast once a year. Well, we did charity work all over, you know, around Dublin, like the hospital in Harold's Cross that we'd go two or three times a year there. When we played in the Theatre Royal as well.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, played in the Theatre Royal.
And is the band still going?
I don't know, Joe.
Well, the school is... The school is gone. Most of the school is gone.
Yeah, three buildings.
And it's now an apartment block. Apartment blocks.
I think that's what they're doing, yeah.
And you got the money for the land.
Oh, it's the De La Salle order, obviously.
Oh, did he? Okay, because my blood, sweat and tears, so was yours, are in that schoolyard.
Yeah, I did, and I played football and hurling for the school. And they used to have a cinema there.
On a Sunday night, yeah, that's right.
Brother, he was a Cork man. Brother Damien was in charge of that.
To raise money, yeah.
Yeah, to raise money, yeah. Well, you see all those now, there's very few De La Salle brothers left, so... The head office is in Castletown in County Laois. So they need the money to look after whoever's left.
Yeah, but they would have got hundreds of millions for that land. It's an incredible...
Probably,
and you say it went... would that land not have been owned by the Diocese of Dublin?
I'm not sure, Joe.
We'll try and find out.
Don't know.
Follow the money, okay.
I know the bishop would ask the head of the De La Salle Order, to send brothers into the school.
Yeah, I remember it. Okay, Jerry Kenny, good health, yeah. And you're sounding great.
You too. Have a nice weekend.
You too, old pal. And remember, this time next week, we will be hopefully finishing up in good stead and a good fettle in the Dolman Hotel in Carlow for the bank holiday Funny Friday. Everyone is welcome. Mark McGrath on sound, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, Owen McLaughlin is the producer, Annette Egan is the series producer, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer, in store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.